Phoenix.
Phoenix. That's his first word, by the way. Like, say something. Phoenix. Phoenix. Phoenix.
Yeah.
Why?
I think he's a little obsessed.
He's like, broccoli cheddar hot pocket. It's cold in the middle, just like I like it. Objectively wrong. Jumps on a, I would assume, a prison guard, and like throws his like on the tiddlywinks. The guy's foot lands in all the green tiddlywinks and they go flying. It's beautiful. I was like, ooh, that's a little flair on that. And then Winslow stands up on the conveyor belt and starts running down the conveyor belt screaming. And then there's an outtake tube. He jumps into a box of tiddlywink boxes, slides down the ramp into a truck that then drives. Is this too much? I'm sorry. They drive away. The box falls out of the truck, and now he's escaped prison through his rage.
It is a pretty nice shot because he like just how everything is. He like goes into the box, and like you know that it's like an output sort of a thing. So it like when they cut to the truck just driving by and the box flying out and Winslow getting out of it, it's like, oh, okay, that's telling a pretty cohesive story.
I know, but it's such. I mean, this movie is so interlaced with chaotic moments like that and then like nonsensical shit that like my notes are scribbles. We're still a page away from me needing to show you my notes and being like, what is this? Okay, I'm sorry.
But the energy of the scene does not end there because Winslow goes on a rampage through Swan's headquarters and he busts up some.
Okay, so he runs past the secretary and she's like, what? And then she hits the button for the guards, the same button she hit before. It's like, wah, wah. And then he runs into a room that is delightfully stacked with convenient boxes of records. He throws them to the ground. He runs to the left. He pushes boxes over. He runs to the right. He throws boxes over.
The guards rush in and then they immediately rush out.
Then he like makes it to a door where he, a printing room, and he like, oh wait, he already did this. This is where the records are. He knocks the door handle off of like a solid steel door to get into these records. And then he makes it, he's like, oh, they'll never, he doesn't actually say anything, but he's like, they'll never make records again. And he pulls, how is he still dressed for the prison? Okay. How is he still, he's just run away from prison. The paradise is opening the next day. This is the same day he's escaped prison. He gets up to the printing machine, which if you don't know, the record press injects plastic into these molds and then smushes it. And this is a real machine. He pulls from his shirt. Do you see what he pulls? Not one, not two. He pulls three sticks of dynamite out of his shirt, all of freaking, again, another Bugs Bunny reference, but like where?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
How?
Right.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
He goes to put it in the machine. He trips. He falls. His arm gets stuck. His head goes back.
The cop like shoots at him.
Gets him in the leg.
Yeah. And so that's why he like is falling back over into the mold. And he like flips a switch because his sleeve got caught on it.
Right.
And it presses into his face.
Yes. Okay. It makes it onto his permanent record. That's all, folks. Okay. Enough Looney Tunes. This is part Sean fact, part Nomi fact. Oh, I just called myself Nomi. I didn't like that. You can call me Nomi if you want to. But okay, so this was a real printing press and they had put in blocks so that it couldn't fully close on his head in the actual scene. And what happened was, is that they're a very strong machine. So the block that was protecting his head from being crushed crumpled because the machine was so strong and his head was still in there. And he was like, oh, and he pulls his head out right in the nick of time. It's the scream he made when he almost died in that machine. They kept it. That's a real scream. That's a real, I'm going to die.
At what point do you think we're going to put a man's head into this actual machine and we're just going to assume that the blocks aren't going to crumple? Why wouldn't you test that? Why would you?
That's a fair point.
Like logistically, let's go ahead and actually test this. I'm so glad that I don't think you could do that nowadays. I mean, you wouldn't have to because we got CG. But still, it's like, I'm so kind of glad that, like, if I were to be a random person in a movie, that there would have to be safety regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I know. There's so many problems. So
many. Well, I'm glad he didn't die on set.
Yeah, me too.
Which is a foreshadowing. So Winslow, you know, is disfigured and he stumbles out and he like goes into the water.
Very dramatic, throws himself against cars and he's like, ah, crawling on the ground. You see a bit of his googly eye and the redness on his face. He's covered in blood. His leg is bleeding. He crawls. This is the first time he crawls dramatically across the ground to his own end. Mm-hmm. And then he makes it to the water where he like rolls himself all of the shape of water into the water.
I was thinking of the penguin from Batman Returns. There's that police chase that he does.
Okay. It's true.
Yeah.
Dramatically rolling into water to escape is pain.
It's interesting that you'd mention Batman because Paul Williams actually does the penguin in Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Kind of love, like, I remember looking that up. I was like, oh, wow.
There's a spinning newspaper.
Paradise Gates Open headline.
Cuts down to the bottom. Composer confirmed drug abuser shot by the police. Couldn't recover the body, blah, blah, blah. I was like, nobody knew him. Mm-hmm. Nobody had any idea who Winslow was. If Swan was this big genius for the last 20 plus years, right? Mm-hmm. Working in the industry. Everybody knows and loves Swan. But this no name, can't get his foot in the front door composer, made front page with him. It might be the most unbelievable thing in this film. He wouldn't have made front page.
And this is where it breaks down for you.
Yeah, this is where the science breaks down for me.
Can I also just mention, I am so done with exposition done through newsprint.
You don't like that? I kind of think it's convenient.
Well, I mean, when it's not done through print, it's some news reporter on a TV saying everything that's happening.
Fights broke out downtown.
Yeah.
Mass hysteria running in the streets. And now, Clark with the weather.
I think it's an easy way to exposit, and I think there are more creative ways that you could probably do that through dialogue that still sound natural. It's a challenge to exposit through dialogue that makes it sound natural. Well, I should say that.
Don't worry, they're going to fail at that later on in this film, too.
Every time I see a newspaper come up like that, I want it to be flipping around before it finally gets to me. And it always has to have that sort of Batman sound of na 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 na.
Yes. One of my favorite things that CinemaSins does on YouTube is they pause the screen and then they read the articles around the expositional piece. It's hilarious. They'll be like, this whole paragraph here is a geography paper, but the title says Foreign Minister something something.
What I would like to see is if people do exposit through newspapers, they just take random Onion articles and put them in there.
Yes. Mm. One of the saddest Reddit pages I started following recently is like real life Onion articles. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It hurts because I'm like, oh, that's really funny. Not true. Oh, no.
POV with heavy breathing in the back to the back entrance of paradise.
I call it Vader breath.
Yeah. It reminds me of the horror movie Halloween and how, I mean, I don't know anything about Halloween outside. Well, it is Halloween that I'm thinking of where you got that POV and you got the heavy breathing.
Yeah.
I think that's Halloween.
Right.
And
I think you're right.
Okay. Yeah.
And Sean can correct us in his next Sean notes. Sean facts.
Yes.
If we're super wrong. He's made it into the building. He manages to find himself backstage. He walks from the ground floor up three flights of stairs past no fewer than a dozen people, all of whom do not turn around to look at the guy who is audibly breathing and stomping his feet.
There's like a few people outside the building who do notice him, and the first thing they do is flee.
Yeah, big biker types, death mm-hmm. record guys. They're like, so I put a tire in his mouth and I just kicked his ass.
Oh, no, a defeated guy.
And then they run away. They run down an alleyway and he pursues them. And that's how he gets into the building. But they dodge around a car and they do this little skippy walk. They do a little skippy run walk. Like they go from like, oh, no, and running down an alleyway to like around a car. It's Swan's car, but like it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think when he's going backstage, there's actually like there's a group of women who are like being told what to do, and one of them actually like it's like relatively close to his face, or you see the actress kind of like the back of her head is looking at a schedule mm-hmm. and it gets pretty close to the camera, so it's like even she's not paying attention.
Well, there's another guy. He gets up all three flights of stairs.
Yeah.
A guy is walking out of his amazing hair on that guy, by the way. Like this guy walks out of the costume room. Right next to costumes is costume storage. And I'm like, that's the same thing. Just two different names on different doors.
Right.
But he goes not into the open costume door, but into the costume storage. And now even more convenient things happen.
Mask and cape, the last refuge of the disfigured. Sorry, that was mean. That was mean. That
makes perfect sense. His shirt is this pretty impressive, almost like a doctor's like offset seam where it like comes down in some really cool buckles. And there's so many birds in this film, but the helmet is a bird mask with like a big like his one eye, and his other eye is like covered by a little screen, and then like it's silver, and I think of it as almost delicately lined but very simple helmet. That's all my notes about that. But when he puts it on, because his lips are like, I don't think his lips were black yet. It's not until he puts the helmet on that his entire exposed eyeball becomes covered in black, like Batman's in Batman Returns, mm-hmm. where he gets a beautiful smoky eye when he puts on the mask. But he also has a black lipstick, mm-hmm. and this completes his look.
Yeah.
If you take it apart objectively, it's awful. But actually, when it's all together, I'm not really mad about it.
Right. And we don't actually see the costume at this point.
Oh, sorry.
It shifts from his POV getting that stuff.
And he puts on the helmet. You're there as he puts it on.
Oh, yeah. And that's like where the scene like kind of fades out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just totally told you all about his outfit.
That's okay. It's still, it's still important. And, you know, you gave details on the costume, which we do see. So
but now they're doing a wet rehearsal, mm-hmm. down on the stage. We have gone from greasers.
Sorry.
Beach Boys.
I got a little bit like nostalgic when you said wet rehearsal. I was like, oh, sorry.
I used to do theater stuff and I talked about it a minute ago.
Yeah. Juicy Fruits turn into the Beach Bums.
They're the same three guys.
Yeah. But what's interesting about this is like in the Juicy Fruits, there was one guy. He was obviously the lead singer. The other two are backups. Uh-huh. And that ends up kind of changing. Another one of the backups turns into the lead singer and that lead singer turns into a backup. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
They say the line and just think of any Beach Boys song that you know, because they all sound the same except for. Yeah. No, they all sound the same.
Yeah.
The line is, carburetors, that's what life's all about.
This is the beginning of a song called Upholstery.
I don't remember how it goes.
Upholstery. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
They all sound the same. Little Beach Car Unit. They're all the same.
The Beach Boys.
Yeah. Yeah. The Beach Bums.
Beach Bums. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Bums. We're not talking about any other group.
Copyright.
Yeah, and the screen is split. We see
now I will commend them on this. I'm so sorry for cutting you off. Okay. I will commend them on this. Several times in the film, they do, because Swan is always recording everything. Cameras everywhere all the time. They do a split shot here and it matches up perfectly. Like you've got the point of view from the audience and then you've got backstage and they both sync up perfect. It's like a continuous shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brian De Palma, the director of this, is known for the longest continuous shot, and that is in Snake Eyes with Nicolas Cage.
And this is not a Sean fact. This is I read it on the IMDb page fact. This is Nicolas Cage's favorite Brian De Palma film, and he later directed him in 1998, I want to say. And what was the movie?
98 was Snake Eyes.
It was Snake Eyes, yeah. He directed him in Snake Eyes. I get Nicolas Cage energy off of this film.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Please go.
So split screen, we see on the right one, on the right screen, we see front the camera on the stage. Mm-hmm. And that's where like most of that is taking place, is just as the performance is going. The left side of the screen is where we see a bomb getting put into the trunk of a car.
A little box car that
says Beach Bums on the license plate.
Got fake exhaust coming out of it.
Yeah. And like we see someone put that in there.
Yeah.
And
a caped figure.
Well, we assume that they would be caped.
Yeah.
Because we just saw that in the last scene. So continuum of movement, I think. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
No, you're right.
Ah.
I will tell you that the Beach Bums all have really bad blonde wigs on, which just reinforces the fact that they never quite get the thing right. And it's all this big farce. But like I was telling Jen, it reminds me, you know Kyle Mooney from SNL?
Name doesn't ring a bell.
His humor is just a little off and it's not my flavor, and he's great, but like I never quite get his humor, and I felt that really hard in this movie. And so like the guy looks like Kyle Mooney, and then I'm getting Kyle Mooney energy off of him. Sorry, I keep saying that energy thing. It'll go away. But like it hurt. But then after I saw him being the guy from Beach Bums being Kyle Mooney, like all I could do for the rest of the film was equate various actors with the SNL person they look like. And I do that at least 4 more times in my notes. So just as a warning.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the left side of the screen, we see the stuff going on in the backstage. And like one of the surfer babes is like, I'm cold. And the guy's like, we're not paying you to be cold. You got to like, you know, just
Philbin.
Yeah, Philbin. And then one of the backup singers comes out over to him. Is like, I'm just not feeling well. Like, I want to go home. I got a headache. I don't feel well. Something's really weird about this, which you could kind of interpret as like the oddity of, you know, the Phantom being there. Philbin responds with being like, here, take this and get back out on stage.
He like straight up forces pills into this guy's mouth and then runs his hand down his neck giving a dog a pill style and makes him swallow it. And then he's like, get your ass on the car and smile. And then they push the car out in front of the crowd.
Right.
No, not a crowd, the empty theater, but onto stage.
And then we get an explosion.
Jeepers.
Yeah.
My original notes are like, I like it when the car blew up. But now I watch the second time and my brain is just like fizzing wires right now. So like, of course the car blew up.
And there is actually, this is how you know Swan is recording everything, because the right side of the camera is seeing some mysterious figure up in the rafters kind of like show himself and then peek back down. And we see later, after the explosion, Swan is reviewing footage.
Well, yeah, because he has to go to his secret recording area. Like, he's got a video room where he keeps his film, right? But the room is a secret room. So you see him walk up these stairs. He's in a pink outfit that is just wow. And he pulls a wall sconce. A mirror opens up. He steps into the secret passageway. The mirror closes. Boom, Phantom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's their first facial of him, right?
Yeah.
So then it goes to Swan reviewing the videotape, and he goes and he sees the Phantom.
Right. And that's when he sees him, and then he's like, oh, crud. I think that's Winslow. Well, he doesn't say that.
Because then he walks out of the room, and then there's a knife to his throat, and he's like, oh, Winslow. And he's like, yeah, of course you would know that. No, you wouldn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't thought about this guy in 6 months.
Right.
If you thought about him at all.
Depending on the timeline, because it's been pretty good about letting us know when there are skips of time. There was 6 months was like, that 6 month time skip happened like right before Winslow went on his rampage and got his face disfigured.
Right.
So then it's quite possible that Swan could have very easily inferred that because of the fact that his people would have been like, oh yeah, it's that leech guy. And so he could have been like, oh, he got his face disfigured. Maybe he's got video cameras in the record room. So...
yeah, well, here's the thing. He's got evil.
Yeah.
He knows evil things. So he just knows.
Right.
Because he's evil.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, so, but... okay. Speaking of problematic, the way I describe Swan's outfit in my notes is a little, you can cut this if you need to, but I said 70s lesbian real estate agent.
I mean, I made a reference to capes and masks being the last refuge of the disfigured. So, like, I'm...
doesn't seem as rude as mine.
I don't know. I mean...
I don't know. It's okay. You can strike it from the record if you'd like. But, yeah. Okay. Swan pulls his mask off, and you see the black eye, the black makeup on his eye, and it is straight up a perfect wing. Like, him's got them points.
Nice.
Yeah.
You also hear Winslow making, like, ah, yeah.
What? Speak up, Winslow.
What's wrong with your voice? Swan gets
I'm pretty sure Winslow doesn't shut his mouth for the rest of the film. Not once. Not all the way.
And Swan eventually gets out of being killed by convincing Winslow to go ahead and work for him. And I'm like, does Winslow have anything else? I mean, if he were to kill Swan, then what else has he got going on?
Yeah, but he's like, you will play your music. You can retool it. We'll get it on there. And he's like, only Phoenix can sing.
No, that's later.
That is later?
Yeah, that's later.
Because she's auditioning.
Yeah.
Because
Swan's like, Winslow's just sort of like, kind of like puts the mask back on and then he shuffles away. And Swan's like, you should come to the auditions tomorrow. And that's when we see women singing.
Okay.
And that's what we see Phoenix.
They are doing, they have to retool it because they blew up the set. So I guess a lot of more time has passed than it feels like in the film. Like, it feels like it takes course over a week, but it's really the better part of a year, if not more.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So audition time with Lady Singing.
This girl's like, I'm singing. He's like, next.
And Phoenix is the next lady to sing. And she gets up there.
Do I get to sing this time?
Is that all I have to do? And he's
Yeah. We're not looking for singers. We're looking for screamers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. And so...
So she starts to walk off.
And Swan stops her.
Because Winslow stops him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that's Phoenix. Only Phoenix. And then Swan's like, let me ask you a question, Phoenix. Whoa. I hate male characters asking unreasonable or rude or gross things at women that I would never, and I would be like, that is awful and I don't like you and you can go eat it. Mm-hmm. Right. But he's like, what would you give me to sing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so she does sing this song called Special to Me. That's like the next song in the soundtrack. And she does this whole, like, this is part of the reason why it makes me think it's a musical, is because of the fact that she's singing this song, and it's a full on song. And it's only towards the very end that you see like Swan turn to Winslow. And it's just sort of like, she's good, isn't she? So we're going to talk, right? Because Winslow wants the singer.
Right. My issue in contention with the scene, she goes to like give it her all, right? Mm-hmm. She's in the beautiful outfit, again, costuming for the ladies in this, impeccable,
right?
But not on Sissy's 6th day. But like, she throws her hat to the ground, makes me mad. Then she does this herky arm jerky dance that I've only ever seen in movies in the 70s, and I don't get it. I don't get it. There's no like shimmy to it. It's just these hulking your shoulder over thing.
Yeah.
It's like she
sings the song and she's dancing a little bit and moving her body, and she's like, how does a person dance? Do they do this wave like motion in their body?
It's like if you had a shawl on and it was falling down and you were trying to get it up without using your arms. Is that right?
That is actually perfect. Yeah. And then she, like, at the very end of it, she puts the mic back on the stand, and then she just sort of like does like that motion off the stage.
Yeah. And then, but she looks directly to camera again.
Oh, yeah.
She directs to camera the singing.
That really got to you when we watched it.
I didn't like it. It's too fourth wall breaky. And you didn't sign me up for that. That's not this film.
Do you think that there's a possibility she's looking at a camera?
I think that's the only way I can explain it. Because Swan films everything. It must be, but she's just like, ugh. And then she gives like this, I'm killing it face to the camera. And I'm like, ugh. And then she dances off stage, and then she runs right back on stage. And I'm like, why did you exit if you're just going to come right back? And then she's just like staring up at the booth, right?
You don't like her performance. That's very obvious. How do you feel about her singing?
Mediocre. It's not great.
Yeah.
She isn't off key, but I expect more than that if she's supposed to be this freaking angel from above. But no. Unfortunately, her mediocreness and Winslow's unbelievability kind of match up for me in that he has an unreasonable obsession and she's not worthy of being obsessed about. So obviously he's insane and it totally justifies it all for me. Like, that's fine. That's fine. I don't mind that at all. If somebody's just like, yeah, the broccoli cheese Hot Pocket's the best pocket, I'd be like, you're objectively wrong, but you're allowed to have your opinion.
The Faust and the Furious. Had to get that in somewhere.
Faust and the Furious. Awful. You couldn't have brought that up when we were blowing up a car?
I wanted it to be about you being angry at something, like staring at a camera that doesn't exist.
Whatever.
Two Phantom, Two Paradise.
Now I have to come up with a Phantom name or a Faust joke.
Well, okay, so Jen brought up Faust, okay. And then I brought up Phantom of the Opera. There's a third.
Okay, hold on. I'll come up with one. It'll be really good.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Not right this second. No, I'll think about it. Where were we in the plot?
So Phoenix walks off the stage and then she comes back and...
uselessly.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does Swan do?
I think that's when he asks her what she wants. What would she do?
Oh, okay. Wait. So during, I'm sorry, at the end of the song, she gives she turns to the camera and she's like, she's like, I'm killing it. Yeah. Right. And that's when my notes say in all caps, you want to go ahead and read that? You want to read that?
How dare you make me watch this with my eyes?
Yeah. I wrote that in all caps. Do you know how hard it is to write in all caps?
Great.
It's a little hard. How dare you make me watch that with my eyes? She flash dances off stage and runs back. Okay. Now we're in the recording studio again, right?
Yeah. And this is...
He's
singing the song. Winslow is singing the song that he sang when we first see him at the piano. and you see like it's probably like 3 minutes of just like, we're in a booth and we're going to be like fixing him with electronics.
They're programming a voice box for him, and it's just him and Swan. Mm-hmm. But I call this the electric singing nightmare because he sounds like all jaggedy and stuff. And he's like, a friend. And what is that lyric that's so bad?
Let me bring that up
a
again.
A friend is a friend, a thing. A friend and a friend.
Yeah, I'm going to say that that's exactly the lyric.
A friend. He's like, a friend is a friend. And then it goes, a friend.
And it starts sounding like Paul Williams' voice.
Okay, so here's the thing. We watched it with, the first time we watched it with captions on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they're singing, they put hashtags next to the words, because then you know that they're singing or whatever. And sometimes it bleeds into the text if it's over music. Okay, so when Swan is adjusting his voice, the screen literally said, hashtag filters, hashtag Dolbies, hashtag perfect. And the thing is, when he says perfect, when Swan says perfect, the audio has switched from the electronic nightmare to Paul Williams' voice. So he's like, perfect to himself.
Yes.
Which is kind of hashtag perfect. I will give the when it's unintentionally good. Like, what? So then he's plugged. Winslow's plugged into the wall, singing perfectly. When he's plugged in, he sounds perfect. But when it's unplugged, he sounds a little bit like this again. And he's like, "Well, you can talk now."
Yeah, it's
Swan's like, "You can talk. You can't sing."
It's like someone talking through a radio back in like sitting and hearing audio from a radio,
like an eloquent Dalek.
Yeah. Phoenix.
That's his first word, by the way. Like, say something. Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Why?
I think he's a little obsessed.
He's like, broccoli cheddar hot pocket. It's cold in the middle, just like I like it. Objectively wrong. But you're welcome to it, man.
Okay, I need to calm down. That was...
His giant eyeballs are on the screen for about the next 37 years. And then Swan is like, well, you need to rewrite this for Phoenix. All 200 to 300 pages of his cantata. He has to rewrite it in a week. A week.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, but in order for Winslow to go forward with this, he has to sign a contract.
Oh, that's right.
And it's probably the rest of the ream in paper, because it's a thick contract. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't even read through it, which, ladies and gentlemen, and those that are...
Variations thereupon,
I would like to remind you, it is important that you read through these agreements, because essentially you are giving away your rights every time you use a piece of electronics.
That's true.
Unfortunately, but you at least are informed about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he does the most reading of the contract of anybody else in the entire film.
He asks about a couple of clauses.
Yes, that are just the worst.
Like, yeah.
All those things that are excluded will then be included.
Yeah. What does that mean? Oh, that's a transportation clause.
Yeah, we might have mixed them up, but that is...
Yeah.
He Swan explains everything he questions, you know, phrases that aren't ambiguous to me. He's like, everything, living, dead, body, soul, will be included in the dot, dot, dot.
Right.
That's the transportation clause, and then the everything excluded will be included.
And it's like, what's that all about?
That's to protect you.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No, not at all.
And then he gets Winslow to sign the contract in blood.
Okay, all right. You know, horror movie me is just like, ugh, every time. The only good blood makeup in this entire film is in the just got beat up outside the Swanage. Mm, I hate it. Okay, but like, this blood is... obviously ink.
Yeah. It's just red ink. Very watery red ink.
Yeah. Swan pricks Winslow's finger and has him sign in blood. And then he pricks his own finger, swipes his thumb across to a stamp, and stamps his name on the contract.
Which makes me wonder how many times he's done this with other people.
He's not unfamiliar with it.
Right. And then we see Swan watching a video where we hear his voice, but it's craggly. And it's essentially the same scene that we just saw between him and Winslow. And it's just the shot is just Paul Williams looking intently at something. And we hear the audio.
Yeah. Yeah. This is where I wrote in my notes. How far up its own butt is this movie? I don't know now. Why did I write hashtag tasty right next to that in my notes? I'm pretty sure it was a thing on the screen. Like, is somebody singing now? Does somebody say tasty?
I don't think so. It's your brain trying to like recontextualize itself so that way it doesn't go insane.
Yeah, probably.
Next music number is Swan's Theme. And this is like a montage of Winslow going through and like rewriting everything.
Right. Because he told Winslow that he's going to have Phoenix sing, but he's like, no, not Phoenix, somebody else, somebody better, which again, can't disagree with. But he's in a giant gold record desk that looks like the desk that Ron Swanson had. Swanson in Parks and Recs, where he's getting punished and he can't turn away, or he used to have an office and then he gets this round desk and now people can talk to him all the time. And every time somebody walks up to him, he just turns so he doesn't have to talk to them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see. I completely forgot about that. I always forget about that desk, and it's a record and Swan's in the middle, which means in order to get into the middle, he has to climb underneath it.
There's no way to get in there unless he climbed over or under it.
And Swan's talking to Philbin about like, we need to replace Phoenix because she's too perfect. And I don't like anybody perfect who isn't me.
You know how I abhor perfection. So honey, he would hate me.
And he sees like there's a folk singing group that reminds me of Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then there's like a dual sisters who are just like...
Reminds me of the Carpenters.
Yeah. And then I told you about this. I'm mad about this. Mm-hmm. In my notes, I was like, oh, some Motown sisters that remind me of the Greek chorus from Hercules, but also they remind me of...
Oh, Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors, right? Because there's three of them. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
What did we call them?
Chiffon, Ronette, and Crystal.
Yeah, but we had a special name for them. Maybe we just called them Greek Chorus?
We
came up with an acronym. It was like Shoko Row or something like that. Anyways, it doesn't matter. I see them and I got instantly excited. I was like, oh, great, some non-evil cop brown people. And they immediately pan away. And I'm like, this movie would have been infinitely more engaging maybe if there were like these strong, powerful, beautiful women doo-wop in some freaking, they pan away. They just pan away.
They do pan away to a man. A man who is glam rock-tastic, but is a horrible singer.
I mean, we're talking about beef.
We're talking about beef.
Garrett Graham is the saving grace of this movie.
Yes.
Come at me. We'll throw hands. He's a delight.
Yes.
That's it. We couldn't debate some like more problematic parts of him, but like he's the only person that I hold as redeemable.
Yeah. Well, he is. He actually is the only character who like has a moment to redeem himself, and he doesn't really take it. But if you ask me, if he wasn't stopped, he would have made a clean getaway.
Yeah. 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 Oh, I called them the Motown Trio in my notes. In the credits, they're listed as the Black Girls, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
Next page of notes.
And this is where we're at a press announcement about the Faust Cantata by the late Winslow Leach, who's not actually dead, by the way.
This is where my notes say, it was only 44 minutes before I asked how much longer there was to this film.
This is like the midway point.
Yeah. There was like 54 minutes left. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I was like, I should learn to take a break. Not that I want to be this person, but like... If I'm getting overwhelmed by a piece of media I'm consuming, I have the option to pause it and get up and walk around a bit. But I'm like, no, we will chew our way through this cardboard box to the delicious ham, cheddar, broccoli.
hot bucket.
Sorry, I'll stop it. It just made sense.
So Swan does not have any pictures of himself. So the press can't go ahead and put pictures up because like they specifically talk about how he has his image copywritten.
Yeah, he doesn't share his image, and we learn later why, but again, it's that Sia, not Sia, like, singer.
Yeah.
I feel like I should spell it every time, but like that whole no face thing that some actors, and not actors, actors always use their face.
musicians?
The ambiguity of musicians.
Yeah.
The mysteriousness, lending itself to its notoriety. That's what he's playing up.
Right.
Oh, because we have a spinning clock montage and a melting blood candle.
Oh, yeah. And that's when we get the press announcement where everybody's there. He comes up to the podium and you see another one of the icons for the Death record label that's covering up Swan Song.
So the montage with the candle and everything, it's being sung over by the Phantom as he like thinks about Phoenix, right? And I'm sorry to go back to it, but I'm pretty sure he says the lyric because I don't know why I would write this down.
Okay.
Come together in me now. I don't like that lyric either. But also, now to where you are, Swan says the regrettable phrase, live on the Death label. I don't know where the satire ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm colorblind in a ball pit and you're asking me to get all the green ones, like those tiddlywinks that went flying around that guard's foot. I don't know.
Beef.
It's what's for dinner. Not sponsored. So he does actually announce beef at this press tour. And you see like the camera pan over from Swan to this coffin that's standing upright.
And now the undead boys are around it and they are juicy fruits and they are beach bums. But now they're standing in a different order with a different look.
Is it just me or do they give off a huge Spinal Tap?
Oh, this is Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got a feeling. I got a feeling for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're the most attractive as the dead boys.
Mm-hmm.
The Definitely. Undead boys.
Yeah. The undeads.
Yeah.
They look kind of like Kiss.
No, that's not until the last scene. That's when they take on the
performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole movie is like a time warp. It's very easy to get lost in it.
Yeah. So this is where they're goth, but they aren't glam goth. Mm-hmm. They haven't gone full Kiss yet. They're in like late Jagger, early Jack White.
Okay.
Aesthetics. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page, though. There's an artistic style that they do in the last specific... I don't know if it's a Sean fact or if I read it on IMDb, but it's a specific artistic style that was supposed to be goth inspired or something.
Yeah. And so after they present themselves from behind the coffin, which is standing upright, the coffin then opens to reveal Beef, played by, again, Garrett Graham, who proceeds to make a face.
And I would like to make a noise that is like that face, and it would be something like
he stretches out his mouth really wide. See,
then go ahead in your car or wherever, make that noise.
That's the face that he's making.
That's the face.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, I love
it. So you know, Naomi, how you have an SNL character?
Yes, for everyone.
Beef looks like Will Forte.
That's it. That's right. It's actually right there in my notes. Will Forte.
Nice.
He's the guy from Last Guy on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But he's covered in silver body paint. Like, did you notice?
His torso is in silver body paint that comes to it starts out on his shoulders and then it goes down to a V to like his midsection.
Yes. And he's got a skull on his face. And so this guy, he's makeuped and he's got super curly hair, but he's got always by the corner, I would say his stage left corner of his mouth, stage right. It's
okay.
It's his right cheek.
Okay. So okay. His right. We were talking about stage left and right earlier. Oh, gosh, theater nerds. Okay. So, but he's always got something drawn by his mouth. And at this point, and I've written them all down, this is a skull. And in this scene, he's got little red gems for the eyeballs. And this, it's probably the size of a dime. And they use the same shot in the montage at the end of the film. P.S. There's a montage at the end of the film, guys.
Mm hmm.
Sweet baby Jesus. But in that same shot, he doesn't have the red jewels on it. So I'm thinking they either put them in or there was a scene with the jewels and then without the jewels and they've got them both. I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes me mad. It's a really minor consistency error. And I was like, I don't care for it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So then we cut to Winslow sleeping on his work, his creation. And Swan comes and wakes him up, giving him pills for breakfast. And he's talking, Swan's like talking about like, oh, we got to make sure that this is ready by Friday. Today's only Thursday. And Winslow's like, yeah, it'll be ready.
It is the night before the performance.
Mm-hmm.
They've just brought in the artist. The writer is still writing the thing. And then I was like, that's not good theater work. That's bad podcasting prep levels of work.
So that's like shooting a movie the day after you get the script.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
Hey, this was scored for a chick.
Oh, but before that, we do see Swan leaving this like area that he has like Winslow imprisoned in.
Yeah.
And he's leaving and they bring in some bricks. And there's always guards in front of this like door.
They padlock the door.
Yeah.
But then they brick up the padlocked door.
They're bringing in the bricks because Swan is getting close to like just bricking up Winslow into this area.
Yes.
And that's when we cut to a rehearsal where Beef is just like, wah!
He's like, this is scored for a chick. Change it, Swan says. He says, make it your own. You know, make it look nothing like it does.
The exact line is, Swan, this was scored for a chick. I'm not doing this in drag.
Okay, not inappropriate word usage,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
He's clearly effeminate. But it's in a glam rock sort of way. So I don't find that offensive. And he's unapologetic, but he's owning his space. So like, I'm not mad.
Right. When we were watching this earlier today, I had mentioned to Naomi that his character is very clearly coded gay. And I'm not like huge. I don't have any actual like university training. I just watch a bunch of YouTube videos from progressive left tubers who specifically deal with media criticism. Mm. So that's really where I'm pulling from as far as my own personal experience goes. So it's one of those things where generally when you code characters queer, at least in movie history, mm-hmm. you're not necessarily stating in the text that character is gay.
Well, yes, he definitely comes across as queer, but you don't actually see him do anything other than maybe present effeminate and maybe have a bit of a sassy attitude. Mm-hmm. There is that one cummerbund thing that might be some sort of metaphor, but like, it's never like he's gay and that's the joke.
Right.
And that's what I like about him. Mm-hmm. And even if somebody was like that, like, you know that he's a strong enough character that he doesn't back down like that.
Very clearly, when Winslow is dressed up as a woman, he is referred to as a pervert by the cops.
Yeah.
And I don't hear any of that kind of text talked about to Beef, to his face. Yeah. And then these are people, like, he has some exchanges with Philbin, but I don't even remember Philbin necessarily bringing that out as a negative.
No, we'll get there, but he only is like...
Did we find the most progressive thing in this movie?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's why he's my princess.
Yeah.
I love him.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best.
Yeah.
Okay.
His character was written to reflect David Bowie. I don't know where I picked that up in...
Oh, but I love David Bowie on so many levels. One of my favorite current quotes is, somebody goes, you said you're... What sexual orientation are you or whatever? And he goes, I'm bisexual. And he's like, would you like to elaborate on that? And he goes like, I fully explained it. And refused to talk about it any further. He's just like, I'm into guys and girls, and that's it. That's all you need to know. That's all you get to know. And he said that all with his eyeballs. Because mm-hmm. Bowie was freaking king.
I would also like to point out in this scene, Beef does a magic trick. He can both sing and eat the scenery at the same time.
Eat the scenery?
Because he had choose the scenery.
Choose.
You never heard that?
No, it sounds familiar. I should know what it means.
Okay, so people who camp up their acting to like the nth degree, it's referred to as like eating the scenery or chewing the scenery.
When he falls down and mm-hmm. he gets up and he starts kicking his feet, and it's obvious that he's not slipping, but he's kicking, and you're like, oh, ha, ha.
Well, and his mannerisms when he sings are very like exaggerated.
Okay,
so
I'm okay with that though. Mm-hmm. I like over the top. Like, I'm not mad about that. I much prefer that to the swanky I'm killing it face she gives while she's dancing.
I wish everybody went over the top in this movie. Like, Winslow tries in moments, but like, I would love it if Swan did and Phoenix were more over the top.
The humor would be more obvious. Mm-hmm. Not that I need to be hit over the head. I like subtle comedy. I freaking love Eagle versus Shark, and that's not like the most in your face obvious comedy. Like, and this is probably one of the things that I will come back to again and again, is that he seems to get the humor of the film the best. Like, if they had all gotten to that level, I would have been like, oh, obvious satire. Awesome. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to understand the humor the best.
Right.
That's not foreshadowing. That's just me spoiling it for you. Okay.
So next scene, we see Winslow sleeping again. He's got pills all over around him. He's sleeping on top of his work. It very clearly says the end. So that's how you know it's the end of his cantata.
Yeah, I should write that at the end of all my notes, the end. So I know I can stop writing them.
Yeah,
I do seem to go on.
And Swan like pulls it out from underneath Winslow, and he gets out, and then you start seeing them mixing cement, and that's how you know the bricks are there, the cement's there, they are bricking up this wall. And Winslow actually wakes up a little bit later, and he opens up the door and he finds he's been sealed in there, and that's when he screams
rage,
and it echoes through the whole club, and
all of them turn around
mm-hmm.
an entire building. Mm-hmm. We know it's more than three floors,
right?
They all turn around,
and that's, and Beef hears it and he freaks out.
He's like, what ungodly thing.
Yeah.
And he goes to Pilsner. I don't remember his name.
Pilsner is what we're gonna call him for the rest of this.
Butthurt. He goes to Philbin. Yeah. Philbin. That's how my brain does. Okay. He goes to Philip and he's like, this is awful. This is terrible. Let's get out of here.
I knew I shouldn't have been doing work done by a dead man. Now he's coming to claim his property.
He's like, whatever.
Take a shower. Cool off. Yay. And he's like, okay.
He's like, I will. They're yelling at each other in this scene, right? But Beef has a belt on that has antlers on it.
Oh, yeah.
And he like, he just kind of, he like walks up to Philbert. Philbin. Philburn? No, I lose it so fast. It comes and it goes. Okay. He walks up to dude with his antler belt and he like kind of thrusts his hips out and you see the antlers press into Philbin's belly.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's hilarious. Like, I'm like, you know what? If Winslow got as close to me as he did to Phoenix, I wish I had that belt.
Mm-hmm.
That's just awesome.
It's got big belt energy.
Yeah. And I'm for it.
Yeah.
I like it.
And Beef takes a shower. And
the best shower.
This is a great scene.
Yeah. Okay. So Brian De Palma loves Psycho. And this is, I mean, it is clear cut, straight up taking it from Psycho. Mm-hmm. So we got Beef singing in the shower. His beauty mark, we're going to call it his cutie mark. His cutie mark is now a Virgo symbol. Mm-hmm. Which I only know because my sister's a Virgo. And then she'll tell me she's a Sagittarius because I can't remember. No, I'm pretty sure it's a Virgo. And it's an M with a little downward facing arrow. And he's like, he's just singing some random song from the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you see like this shot of like him in the shower and like the camera is positioned. So you see the door open and before he gets into the shower, that's when we see this like busted up door, this hole in it. And I'm like, oh.
The guy's laying on the ground covered by bricks.
This is the moment where Winslow goes Super Saiyan and just busts through.
Just busts through a steel door and, you know, bricks.
Yeah.
Like a solid wall of bricks.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then Beef's taking the shower, and so we see Winslow coming through.
Oh, he does coke before he gets in the shower, too. Yeah. He's like, he takes a bunch of coke. He's like.
Yeah. And we see Winslow like take the knife and like cut into the shower.
It's a clear shower curtain. Mm-hmm. That's not like Psycho. That's not on Psycho. I think that was a fabric curtain, but he uses a knife, so you know he's got a knife.
Yeah, and he cuts through the curtain.
He sticks his one good eye in there.
And then Beef turns around and he sees him and he screams. And that's when you see a plunger go into Beef's face.
And it's real wet and it suctions right over his mouth.
Yeah, and Winslow's just like, don't ever sing my music again or I'll kill you.
Only Phoenix can sing. That's his like a robot. Yeah. So he's like, only Phoenix can sing it.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Winslow very easily had a knife. He could have killed Beef. He did not. He was like, no, I'm going to give this guy a chance because he doesn't do it to anybody else.
True. So
didn't do it to those guards.
He repainted his face with a little shamrock cutie mark before he went down the stairs.
Yeah, Beef's trying to make a break for it.
Yeah, he puts on his raggedy Santa jacket and he runs down the stairs and he gets caught by Philbin.
And Philbin's like, where are you going? To Connecticut, to my mother's.
Because he's obviously freaking out. And I think you see the most of his character in this scene because he's just like, I'm out of here. This is crazy. What are you doing? Some psycho just tried to kill me in my shower. Mm-hmm. This is the only thing that can sing the songs.
Yeah. Beef says, I am a professional.
Oh, I wrote it out phonetically.
Professional. Yes.
And then he's like, you know what I think? I think you're on drugs. And he goes, what? You think it's my first time? I know. I know drug real from real real.
Yeah.
Which is now my new favorite thing.
Yeah.
I know drug real from real real. You just being drug real right now. I'm being real real right now.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Philbin wins the conversation and Beef goes back up or else we're not going to have, you know, a plot to a movie.
Yeah.
Which is sad. And that's when we get into this next musical number called Somebody Super Like You by the Undead.
I wrote 10 out of 10 would go see this performance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Undeads are, this is where they're looking like Kiss. They got, you know, the black and white face paint and they go through and they're doing their performance. They go into the crowd. And this is what I love about it. They cut up body parts from quote unquote audience members.
Yes. They only cut to, they'll have like a person and then they'll cut to it being a dummy. And it's obviously a plant. They must have been there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Then they stab it or cut off a limb or decapitate it, suspend it over the crowd and then bifurcate the torso. Ah.
Do you see what they use for their cutting instruments?
Their instruments or their
guitars.
Their guitars and the singer is again, one of the undead boys, right? He's
the undeads, yeah.
The undeads. His microphone is a knife, and I kind of want that.
Yeah.
I want to get, here, internet applauders, public service announcement. Get me just famous enough. It doesn't have to be full famous. Just famous enough that somebody makes me a knife microphone.
Love it.
I want one. It was all glittery and silver. He's like talking at the butt end, the hilt end is where the microphone is. But then like it comes down in a knife and it's all glittery. And he like fake cuts the guy's head off. And I'm like, I probably wouldn't hurt myself on that styrofoam. Mm-hmm. And it looks very, very cool.
Yeah. And they're taking all of these different body parts to the back where you see these backup singers sewing something.
Yes, in this plastic lined trench that looks a lot like the trough that they build Rocky in the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too accusatory of Andrew Lloyd Webber, but this song is totally the Phantom of the Opera song.
It is so similar.
It doesn't have the dun edit. It goes dun, 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 like that. But I mean, there are at least eight notes in there that feel like they're directly lifted.
The Phantom of the Opera as a rock musical, it very much sounds like it comes from this. Because, I mean, they're both kind of Phantom of the Opera related. Mm-hmm. So, and my next note was, as far as stage performances go, it is spot on.
really committed to it. Like, we've only seen rehearsals and crap up until now. But, like, this actually has some, I mean, other than the mannequins looking super fake.
Yeah.
But it's a performance. I don't want to see actual people die. I do want to see actual people die. But in a movie way, not a real life sort of way.
You're going to see that soon. Beef. So they lift the crypt up to this neon lightning bolt. Mm. And that's like the spark of life. It's very much an homage to Frankenstein. And then when it comes back down, you see Beef come out of it. And he's got like cut off red
bicycle shorts. What's their bicycle shorts?
He's got this like ripped crop top. And he's got like this scar.
And all the scars are red glitter.
Yeah. It's sorry, so Jen. Great.
Sorry, Jen. I don't mean to scream into the microphone, but it's all red glitter scars.
My note was Beef comes to life with neon lightning bolt.
That is fantastic. On his outfit, his hair is glitter gold, but on his shorts, there's like one embellishment that I can't not stare at. And it's not that I'm like a total looker upon of crotches, but like there's one rhinestone. It looks like it almost like an earring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like
right on his
right his on crotch. His dangle, and I look at it the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Every time.
Yeah. And this is actually the next song. It's called Life at Last. It's performed by Ray Kennedy, so it's different than Garrett Graham. But Garrett Graham is just like, you know, doing this great performance. And you see like Winslow move behind the stage. Like at one point you see like these strands of silver come down. Mm-hmm. And it's like right after you see Winslow like holding onto a bar and just going right up to the rafters.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. and there are moments where Beef actually is looking around during his performance because he had like, you know, that freak out beforehand.
Yeah, but then like this is all on Graham. Like he doubles down his performance.
Mm-hmm.
As good as his practice song was when he was like making it his own, mm-hmm. like just selling it pretty good. He is impeccable in this scene. He is believable. He is just as over the top as you should be at a rock show. He is full glam rock, exquisite. Delicious princess.
Yep.
For me.
Yes.
Oh, and his cutie mark is now no longer Shamrock because he redrew it for the third time today. It's the male and female symbols, the arrows and the plus signs.
Nice.
So he could be into me.
Mm-hmm.
He might be into both. Very Bowie-esque.
Yeah. Well, at one point he like throws a mic to one of the audience members who looks like a man.
It is a man.
And he does do the kiss.
Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, not mad about that either. I think you're giving us all equal opportunity, Beef.
Mm-hmm.
It's what for dinner.
So Leech like grabs the lightning bolt sign as, you know, Beef positions himself behind a microphone. He's doing all these, you know, extreme moves with his electric guitar.
He's just making a farce out of Faust.
And Winslow like kind of swings the sign so that way it hits Beef. And my next note was Beef leaves the world with a neon lightning.
Aww. That makes me sad.
And suddenly my interest in this movie has just descended into nothing.
So the crowd starts to riot. Oh, he does this really great jerky electrocuted death thing that just seals his character very well. And then the crowd starts to riot because they were super into it. And so then they've taken the stage. The crowd has rioted onto the stage, and then Philbin turns to Phoenix and he's like, get out there! He killed Beef for you! Mm-hmm. He only wants you to sing! And he shoves her out, and then the crowd instantly knows that she's there to sing. They clear the stage without mm-hmm. fighting, and that's totally how rioting works.
Right.
And then she walks over to the microphone, and she starts to sing
Old Souls.
We're old souls. It's a very Carpenters-esque sort of song.
Our love is an old love.
It contains the lyric, we kiss hello. And not good. Like she says, we don't kiss goodbye, we kiss hello. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? Yeah, let it hang there. Because that's really awful.
This is the last line of the song. A kiss when I must go. No tears in time. We kiss hello.
I have a friend who would be like, trash. That is absolute trash. And I agree. And I don't like it. And it's the most memorable song because it's in the preview. That's it. Okay. So she walks slowly across the stage. There's a lady sitting in the front row with a giant hat on who I mm-hmm. had to write in my notes was a jerk because who wears a giant hat to sit front row at a concert? That's mm-hmm. all like eye level. Garbage. And then she walks slowly across the stage. I think she makes eye contact with the camera.
Probably.
I might have been actively seeking to not look her in the face at this point because fairly attractive. Her voice is moderate to middling. And I was just done. Our love isn't all love. And I'm like, this is where I start I'm in my notes drawing the cutie marks so that I remember what they are because I don't want to look at her face. And then she walks back to the back of the stage. The song ends. Everybody loses their god dang minds, although they don't rush the stage again. The curtains close.
Yeah.
And then what directorial cutaway did they use?
I honestly can't remember.
They iris out on her.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations on finishing part two of our review of 1974's Phantom of the Paradise, Applauder. But we still have one more episode before we've concluded our walkthrough and given you our shocked and applaudable moments. In the meantime, why not check out these other fun film podcasts? Flicks X-Rayed recently finished a review of 1980's Xanadu. And Collateral Cinema just released their discussion of their top 5 favorite Mystery Science Theater 3000 episodes. I tagged these podcasts on our Twitter account so you can come back to them later. So be sure to follow us using the handle @ShockedApplaud. You can also find us on Facebook by searching for @ShockedAndApplaud. Hey, this is your audio engineer and Phantom of the Fandom, Jen. We're celebrating 2,000 all-time downloads this month, so we'd like to thank you for your continued listenership, as well as the fantastic reviews you leave in your favorite podcasting app. Rating us and reviewing us is the best way to elevate us in search results. So if you haven't done so yet, we'd really appreciate it. Visit shockedatapplaud.com for links to our show in the app that you use the most. We'll be back in 1 week for the conclusion of this musical horror comedy. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.